In 2024, Medicare expenditures had increased by more than sevenfold from just 2 years earlier in 2022. So they now exceed $10 billion annually, and estimates are that it will hit $15 billion in 2025. Skin substitutes seem particularly vulnerable to fraud, waste, and abuse, and there's been numerous investigations that have come back with findings of fraud.
Welcome to Off the Chart, a Business and Medicine podcast featuring lively and informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about the challenges facing doctors and medical practices. My name is Austin Luttrell. I'm the assistant editor of Medical Economics, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today. In this episode, Medical Economics senior editor Richard Peyerton spoke with David Taws, regional inspector general in the Office of Evaluation and Inspections, part of the Office of Inspector General at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Their conversation centers on a recent OIG report examining explosive growth in Medicare Part B spending on skin substitutes for wound care, where annual costs have risen more than sevenfold in just 2 years, surpassing $10 billion in 2024. Taws explains what's driving those increases, how fraudulent billing schemes have contributed, and what policy changes could help rein in abuse while preserving patient access to legitimate treatments. He also discusses how enforcement works behind the scenes, why Medicare Advantage spending tells a very different story, and what physicians should watch for when approached about skin substitute products that sound too good to be true. David, thank you for joining us, and now let's get into the episode.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And can you introduce yourself and explain a little bit about your training and background?
Sure. So as you just said, I'm Dave Taws. I'm the Regional Inspector General for Evaluation and Inspections within the Office of Evaluation and Inspections, or OEI. That's part of HHS OIG. How I got here, I got out of grad school in 1997 after receiving a master's in public policy, got a job in the Philadelphia Regional Office of OEI, and then worked there as an analyst and then a team leader before in 2011, I was selected to lead the Baltimore Regional Office of OEI. Since then, our regional office mainly focuses on work involving prescription drug payments in Medicare and Medicaid, as well as access to substance abuse treatment.
Those are two tremendously important topics. So that's good to hear that there is a level of oversight involving both of those. Our physician audience, I think, probably has some idea of what the Office of Inspector General does under Health and Human Services. Can you briefly introduce the Office of Inspector General and what is its mission and purpose?
Sure. So we've been around since 1976, trying to ensure that HHS programs are operating well and protecting the health and welfare of beneficiaries who depend on HHS programs. We really have three primary goals. One is fighting fraud, waste, and abuse. Another is promoting quality, safety, and value in HHS programs. And finally, advancing excellence and innovation. The majority of our resources go towards the oversight of Medicare and Medicaid, but we're also responsible for overseeing 100 or more other departmental programs like the FDA, CDC, Head Start. Basically, anything that's covered under HHS is something that we're responsible for oversight of.
One of the things that I think is interesting, we had a new teammate who had transferred within our company last year, and just kind of getting him up to speed, we were talking about the scope and scale of Health and Human Services and just the size of the department, everything under that umbrella. It's just huge. So that's a heck of a lot to keep track of.
It is. That's what we tend to specialize. Nobody can know all of it for sure.
And recently, there was a report that was published by the office regarding payments on skin substitutes for wound care. Can you explain briefly about how that report came about?
So we've actually been working in the skin substitute area for a few years. They're paid as prescription drugs under Medicare Part B, which was an area that we've done a lot of work in, but they weren't held to the same requirements, the price reporting and payment requirements as other Part B drugs, because they're not really a drug. So there were some changes to the law in 2021, and manufacturers of skin substitutes began having to report their prices to Medicare the same way that other drugs did. So we looked to see whether they were following or complying with the new requirements. And we found that, at least at the start, it was only about 50% that were complying. So we made recommendations to CMS, and it looked like reporting was improving. But strangely, we noticed that payments for skin substitutes, Medicare payments, kept going up and up and up. So we wanted to dive into it to see what could be causing, what was behind these increases.
And that's a great segue to the next question. Actually, at least two more questions. What did you find as the main cause or reason for that increase in skin substitute billing?
It's a lot. There were a lot of different things. One is that, at least in Part B, institution or non-institutional settings like physicians' offices, nursing facilities, home care, that the number of enrollees that were associated with skin substitute claims, we hesitate to say received skin substitutes because we're not sure how many of them actually received them. But as far as being billed, a lot more enrollees started getting skin substitutes. And then for the ones that were getting it on average, the number of units, so there it's billed by per square centimeters, a tiny amount. The number of units each enrollee that was getting a skin substitute like was increasing. And then the cost of the products being billed kept going up and up and up. So by the third quarter of 2024, the average cost of the skin substitutes being billed to Medicare was $1,500 per square centimeter. And your average enrollee was getting 80 some square centimeters to treat, or reportedly receiving 80 or so square centimeters to treat a wound each quarter. So that's about $120,000 per patient each quarter. And that was triple the amount just 2 years earlier.
Say, Keith, this is all well and good, but what if someone is looking for more clinical information?
Oh, then they want to check out our sister site, patientcareonline.com, the leading clinical resource for primary care physicians. Again, that's patientcareonline.com.
Again, a great segue because you touched on these points both with the trends and then the size of the skin substitute amount per square centimeter. The little things can add up, and I wanted to ask if you could give an idea about the total dollar amounts involved here.
So, yes, in 2010, I'm sorry, in 24, in 2024, Medicare expenditures had increased by more than sevenfold from just 2 years earlier in 2022. So they now exceed $10 billion annually, and estimates are that it will hit $15 billion in 2025.
Definitely wanted to ask because when you talk about an increase of that magnitude and some of the factors and causes behind it, are there indications that the increases in billing were for skin substitutes were due to fraud?
So we can't say exactly what percentage of the payment increases are due to fraud, but it definitely appears to be a significant issue. Given the high payment amounts, in many cases much higher than their cost, skin substitutes seem particularly vulnerable to fraud, waste, and abuse. And there's been numerous investigations that have come back with findings of fraud.
To elaborate on that maybe a little bit, can you comment on whether there have been any criminal charges, say, or civil filings for recovery based on this report and investigation?
Yes, there's been several cases, but I'll hit the biggest one that is actually there's going to be a sentencing today. And so earlier this year, the Department of Justice publicized a case involving an Arizona couple that pled guilty to healthcare fraud. Alexander Gerke and Jeffrey King pled guilty for causing over $1.2 billion of false and fraudulent claims to be submitted to Medicare and other health insurance companies for skin substitutes over just a period of around 12 to 18 months. So they weren't even medical professionals. She had run an art studio and worked in real estate. He was a DJ and a producer. They started a wound care company, hired a bunch of marketers, supposedly from the solar panel industry, and they scoured nursing homes, hospices, and other settings to find patients with wounds. And then they offered to pay healthcare professionals, usually nurse practitioners, a flat fee to apply and bill for the maximum amount of product. So if it comes in an 8 centimeter by 8 centimeter sheet, that's what you're supposed to bill, 64 square centimeters, even if the wound is tiny, even if the wound is healed. They were actually arrested at Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport preparing to leave the country. They said it was for a honeymoon. We'll never know. In their plea agreements, the couple did admit to targeting elderly Medicare patients, many of whom were in hospice care for medically unnecessary skin substitutes. And along with more than $1 billion in restitution, they face up to 20 years in prison. As I said, Alexander Gerke is actually being sentenced or scheduled to be sentenced today in Arizona.
And not to put too fine a point on it, but when you're talking about that figure, just to emphasize for our audience, that's billion with a B. This is a
That
lot of
billion with
money
a B.
involved.
Yes, that is a lot of money. And there's obviously that's a huge case. There are other many smaller cases out there, but I mean, it was $1 billion again in just 12 to 18 months. So that shows you how much money is to be made on this by unscrupulous actors.
I wanted to maybe differentiate a couple more issues, if I may, for our audience, because it appeared that there were some differences in the spending trends for Medicare Part B and Medicare Advantage.
Yes.
And I was hoping you might be able to discuss that distinction.
So Medicare Advantage now covers about more than half of Medicare enrollees. So you would expect maybe spending or utilization to be the same between or close to the same between Medicare Advantage and traditional Medicare. But in the third quarter or in all of 2024, excuse me, only 3,800 patients received or were billed for a skin substitute in Medicare Advantage compared to 24,000 in Part B. So more than six times more people in traditional Medicare received a skin substitute compared to MA. And then spending in MA was less too. So the average per patient was less, the number of units, the amount of or the cost of what was billed. So MA spending was just 7% of Part B spending. This is likely because MA can use reimbursement and coverage tools like prior authorization that at the moment aren't really available in traditional Medicare.
This is maybe a little bit wonky, but I think our audience will appreciate only because I know that there are a lot of different arguments around Medicare Advantage and its goals and purposes and functions and whether it is an ideal system. Where I'm going with this is that I know that in the past there have been some claims that there is greater propensity for fraud, waste, abuse, and Medicare Advantage than in traditional Medicare. And this is a scenario kind of flipped it on its head a little bit.
Yes, and I think it speaks specifically. I can't get into bigger differences in fraud between the two programs. There's just something specifically about skin substitutes. And I think it has to do with if a lot of these are fraudulent, prior authorization and Medicare Advantage would catch them. So if you've got an item that is particularly vulnerable to fraud, some of the aspects of MA will keep payments from being made compared to Part B, where those kind of tools are more limited.
One of the things I wanted to ask about as well, like I said, we have a physician audience, and I know that doctors work in a number of different care settings, across the US healthcare system. Based on the analysis, were there any trends that you noticed regarding typical care settings that used the most skin substitutes?
So our work focused only on non-institutional settings, I think, as I said earlier. So most of the units, most of the enrollees are being treated in physicians' offices, and that would include podiatrists and nurse practitioners, a lot of times wound care professionals. But home care has grown to about a quarter of patients. But interestingly, that quarter of patients represent more than half of expenditures. And that's because, for whatever reason, those reportedly being treated at home get much more expensive products and a lot more units of that product than they do in physicians' offices.
One of the things I was kind of wondering about, and let me sort of formulate the question, because I didn't have this down exactly in my question list very specifically, but in our conversation, you had referred to that report that had come out earlier. I had it dated as March 2023, that
Yes.
began to identify those significant gaps in manufacturer compliance with the reporting requirements for skin substitutes. And I was hoping, specific to this report and analysis, or maybe just more in general, can you talk a little bit about, as trends maybe emerge over time, it seems like sometimes a situation happens and then, like I said, the trends sort of show up in the data, and then there has to be maybe enforcement action or audits or additional requirements for compliance. And I guess, can you talk a little bit about just sort of that process, maybe in general terms?
And I mean, that is something that we face all the time, especially in traditional Medicare, where bills are required to be paid like within a certain amount of time. So in those cases, we have to wait for claims data to come in, notice anomalies in the claims data, and then hopefully make recommendations to Medicare or Medicaid to make changes. It's a timely process and a time-consuming process, and we've gotten much better at accessing data in real time, but I still there's always going to be a lag in between when something pops up and when the enforcement can catch up to hopefully trying to fix it.
Hey there, Keith Reynolds here, and welcome to the P2 Management Minute. In just 60 seconds, we deliver proven, real-world tactics you can plug into your practice today, whether that means speeding up check-in, lifting staff morale, or nudging patient satisfaction north. No theory, no fluff, just the kind of guidance that fits between appointments and moves the needle before lunch. But the best ideas don't all come from our newsroom. They come from you. Got a clever workflow hack, an employee engagement win, or a lesson learned the hard way? I want to feature it. Shoot me an email at kreynolds@mjhlifesciences.com with your topic, a quick outline, or even a smartphone clip. We'll handle the rest and get your insights in front of your peers nationwide. Let's make every minute count together. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next P2 Management Minute. And again, specific to the skin substitutes, the Inspector General report includes a call to action needed to rein in massive increases in Medicare Part B spending. Can you talk about those recommendations?
Sure. So we want to make sure that when policymakers are thinking about what to do here, we want enrollees who need the treatment to get the treatment. But we also want to remove incentives that drive inappropriate and even fraudulent billing. So what we suggested to policymakers as they're looking to fix this issue. We just posed a few questions like, should skin substitutes be treated as drugs and biologics for Medicare payment purposes? That could be one of the issues driving that they're not like drugs and biologics in the same methods that maybe work to pay for drugs and biologics don't work to pay for skin substitutes. And then, even if skin substitutes continue to be paid as a drug and biologic, are there methods other than ASP or average sales price that could be used to set payment? And finally, what lessons could Part B take for Medicare Advantage? regarding coverage and payment, given that expenditures and utilization under Part B are just are under Medicare Advantage are just a fraction of Part B. So it's hoping to find that balance between ensuring folks that need the care get it, but making sure bad actors can't just come in and bill for hundreds of millions or even $1 billion and get paid and then try to flee the country.
And I think you touched on these points a moment ago, offering some of that guidance. How do you anticipate Office of Inspector General will remain involved with CMS guiding future policy on reimbursement for skin substitutes?
So CMS is enacted or proposed, not yet enacted, a few changes to deal with this, including how payment is set for skin substitutes, as well as some other AI tools. Their skin substitutes are being included in a model in 6 states to try and identify claims that should be subject to prior authorization. What OIG will do is we'll track to see how those changes affect billing for skin substitutes. If fraudulent expenditures or just expenditures overall, even, and utilization go down, if it shifts around, if there's new products that maybe these bad actors shift to. So we'll keep an eye on things, knowing how much money is at stake.
And this goes back to a point you made a few moments ago, and especially talking about some of those processes involved in Medicare Advantage. I know with our audience, I think a lot of times you hear the phrase prior authorization and the red flags automatically go up. But maybe in this instance, it sounds like this is a case where prior authorization is helping avoid or maybe guide the right treatments for the right people at the right times.
Yes. I mean, I can't speak to that specifically other than to say that Medicare Advantage is spending a lot less money. And we've not heard lots of claims about folks there not being able to get wound care treatment if they need it. We're hearing a lot more of fraudulent billing on the traditional Medicare side of things.
One question I always like to ask, our main audience is primary care physicians. What would you like to say to them, or what would you like them to know?
So these products have been heavily marketed, even outside the wound care community. There's people that will post on Reddit or other forums that are like, hey, somebody approached me today. A nurse practitioner will say, somebody approached me today and said I could make all this money, like by applying skin substitutes. Promises like that, be wary. If you hear something that sounds sketchy or too good to be true, it's probably not on the up and up. So if you see something like this, you can submit a complaint to OIG online through our website or call 1-800-HHS-TIPS.
We covered a heck of a lot of ground in a short amount of time here. What did I not ask about that you would like to emphasize?
I would just like to emphasize the role that payment plays in this, that these skin substitute products, unlike traditional drugs and biologics that physicians that listen to you might prescribe, we found that providers were switching from product to product almost on a quarterly basis. Whichever one would have sort of the biggest difference between what the Medicare payment amount was and what those marketing folks were selling it for, they would switch to that product. So you'd see like $500 million in Medicare expenditures one quarter, and then a quarter later, it's down to $1 million. And that just does not happen in the prescription drug world. So reimbursement especially, and reimbursement issues specific to skin substitutes is one of the major drivers of this. And it's something that CMS's proposed rule is attempting to fix.
I'm Richard Payerchin, reporting for Medical Economics. My guest today has been David Taws, Regional Inspector General with the Office of Evaluation and Inspections in the HHS Office of Inspector General. It's been a great conversation. Just thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Once again, that was a conversation between Medical Economics Senior Editor Richard Peyerton and David Taws, Regional Inspector General in the Office of Evaluation and Inspections, part of the Office of Inspector General at HHS. My name is Austin Luttrell, and on behalf of the whole Medical Economics and Physicians Practice teams, I'd like to thank you for listening to the show and ask that you please subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. Be sure to check back on Monday and Thursday mornings for the latest conversations with healthcare experts sharing strategies, stories, and solutions for your practice. You can find us by searching Off the Chart wherever you get your podcasts. Also, if you'd like the best stories that Medical Economics and Physicians Practice publish delivered straight to your email 6 days of the week, subscribe to our newsletters at medicaleconomics.com and physicianspractice.com. Off the Chart, a Business of Medicine podcast, is executive produced by Chris Mazzolini and Keith Reynolds and produced by Austin Luttrell. Medical Economics, Physicians Practice, and Patient Care Online are all members of the MGH Life Sciences family. Thank you.